It's time for The Citizen Lobbyist, a discussion of local, borough, and state politics featuring Terry Snyder and Mike Malefsky.
Good morning, Citizen Lobbyist.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. It's relatively warm, 50 degrees. The sun is not burning hot.
It's not raining.
No, it's not raining. All of the rest of that. And we have not one, but two meetings that happened today. The first one probably has enough information to want to pour over all by itself. And that I'm talking about the Borough Assembly meeting.
I think so, Mike. That was kind of a rodeo, wasn't it?
I'm still dusting myself off because when I thought I understood, then all of a sudden there was a jump and I found myself rolling on the ground saying, what just happened? So let's help people, perhaps listeners who either weren't there or listened or were there and still need a little help to understand just what did happen.
So it was the regularly scheduled assembly meeting. There actually, we should mention, was a prior meeting, but it was behind closed doors because it was a personnel matter having to do with the yearly evaluation of the borough attorney. That was at 4 o'clock, and so they went into executive session for that. The attorney was still there, so I'm assuming it was a good outcome. Of course, they don't really disclose very much. They may have said something, but we weren't there for that part. But it started on time. It was a little different this time. Mayor Halter was not there, nor was to run the meeting, nor was Palmer Assemblyman Matt Beck. But both of them have pretty good attendance records, so they weren't there for this one, though. So they went ahead and started things. Looks like they were off to a pretty good start, only pulling one thing from the consent agenda. They did remove the proclamations that were on there. Because the mayor wasn't there to sign them, and they rolled a lot of the ordinances that were there had to do with road service areas and fire service things that were kind of a duplication. So without any objection, they rolled those together for efficiency. But that was where the efficiency kind of stopped.
Right.
So they had we should stop and say they did have their report from Mayor Cottle in the city of Wasilla, who went down a list of activities that are going on, and Wasilla, he's diligent about being there and really is promoting Wasilla like no other mayor I've known to promote it. They're having farmers market in Wasilla starting out at Ditta Park, and they're having normal Saturday and Sunday outdoor markets at Menard Center, bike rodeos, circuses, all kinds of things. So I would refer to the city of Wasilla's schedule for all of that. They will hold the festivities for the 4th of July festivities in the valley. They always do a big parade and have fireworks and mayor's picnic and that sort of thing. Nate Wallace from the city of Palmer was there. Just to mention what you and I've talked about a lot, Mike, having to do with the council passing a plastic bag ban that mirrors pretty much Wasilla. We've kind of gone into that. Only real difference is the weight of the bag, but I don't think people are really going to notice that. It has to do with the ones you normally get at the check stand,
right?
The big box stores. And it's effective in January. He said one of the reasons they put off that effective date was that Wasilla goes into effect in July, and they just wanted to see what problems may have come up in between so they could take corrective measures, which is kind of like what Palmer does. So they also mentioned that the vacant seat for city council, of course, listeners probably know that Councilman Brad Hansen, who was on the council for some 18 years, took an actual job within the city. And so that seat must now be filled by code, even though there's an election this fall. It has to be filled so that there's full representation on the council. And those applications close this Friday. And so people who do want to apply have until Friday to get their application in. And they will take that up next Tuesday.
That's right, right on the 12th. And the interesting thing to me about that whole process is, as best I know, if someone is interested, unless you have spoken to someone who has said, I've turned in my application, you probably won't know who your opposition is, because right. that's not to be revealed until later on.
Right. And the way I understand it, they'll try to get them all interviewed, but if it's a long list, they may not even make a decision next Tuesday. But we'll see what happens. But officially, that won't move is the date to get your application in. So that is Friday. He also mentioned that the Parks and Rec Board and Planning and Zoning both have openings on them. People can go to the website to look for those very, very important positions for the city. The Colony Days in Palmer is always the big news because it starts tomorrow, Mike. Hard to believe it's already here.
That's right. Yeah.
The school district had a short presentation talking about the legislation that was on the agenda about lapse funds going back, putting in code that lapse funds, the school district gets to keep their lapse funds. There wasn't any discussion on it, so I guess that went without a hitch. She talked a little bit about increases that they're projecting, an 83% graduation rate for this next year. She thinks it's been going up and up. So we often hear that public schools have a poor graduation rate. Yes, they used to, but it's getting better and better. She was asked how we're supporting at-risk kids, and there was some talk of credit recovery that they do, and they track kids that have left to make sure they've enrolled somewhere else. And, of course, homeschooling is available, and they all even offer alternative evening classes, even for kids that have been expelled, which is pretty pretty great that they're able to do that. So they wanted to stress they do their best to keep in touch with every single child. That seemed to pretty much satisfy them. They had one report from somebody from the Fish Commission. Do you want to talk about that, Mike? Or
well, I think the gentleman, Mr. Dello, who reported, has been around a long time. Listeners will probably recognize his byline. He's written extensively with the local paper, The Frontiersman. He is a very knowledgeable practitioner of hunting and fishing, if I can put it that way. And he speaks well. He writes.
Maybe we should have him in for an interview.
I'm thinking that would be the way. Howard Dello is an articulate guy. I think witness you can go back and look at or read his articles and his column, and it lays things out. And my impression about it is that he is not a guy that is speaking with a particular agenda as a lead. He's very much interested in the improvement of any of the regulations and or projects that would make hunting and fishing continue in a healthy way in this area. And so when he speaks, and I thought that he was pretty even-handed, expressing some concern and a need for discussion, and in particular for the board that he is involved with to move forward. And so he's not a, if I could sum it up by saying, he's not a pro-development guy. He's a pro, how do we keep this whole fish and game thing going in a healthy fashion guy. He's not opposed to people doing other things other than hunting and fishing, but he comes across as a responsible advocate, although he is, in some respects, a conservative guy. So,
well, I think what it led to was kind of a small conversation they have had from another presenter a few meetings ago, and now has spoken to the Fish Commission having to do with the land bank and wetland bank.
Right.
That doesn't seem to be operating very well, and there's concerns about the Dolan mine that's going in and how that
exactly
might affect the wetlands. And it is really a very long topic. He couldn't go into it. He didn't want to go into it. He wanted the assembly to have a special meeting with them, with the Fish Commission, so that they could understand it a little bit more. So I think that they set that, I want to say the 19th, I think they set that at 4 o'clock. They're going to
That was the very specific mm-hmm. thing. You've done a great job of describing that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So that would be good to maybe prior to that, have him come in and and have a little interview about it, because it's a very interesting topic, and there is a, it puts everybody, it's one of those, you know, I'm kind of an issues person, Mike, and I like that sometimes we people that we normally don't have tea with work together for the good of everything, and this is about not being against development, but making it sure it happens in a way that we don't compromise one resource for another.
Got it.
And we have a great resource of fish in the Mat-Su, and we're struggling with our fish right now, and it's not just because of that development. There are several other reasons for that. Maybe he can go into that when we interview him, but it is something that people should be aware of. So that was a little presentation there. The next big one they talked about was an ordinance that was going to change the threshold for how many units could be in a multifamily development design. And they actually had a staff report on this. I think I told you when we were recording, Mike, I missed the days when there was a staff report on all the ordinances,
right.
But it's not to be right now. But Jim Sykes did ask for a staff report on it so we could understand it. And to make a long story short, there were a few developers there, one in particular that has done what some might refer to as tiny houses or detached fourplexes that have been popping up around the borough because of our lack of any type of regulation. This regulation was to address that higher density housing on these smaller lots.
Right.
You know, water quality and traffic and parking and all kinds of things for that. And basically it lowered the threshold for where a permit is required so that DEC actually had to review their wastewater plan for that. Seems pretty reasonable. But what wasn't reasonable is they didn't have the ordinance right.
Right.
And the number of structures they were proposing could be developed on a lot wasn't right. And rightfully so, I think. That's something you should get right. And so after many motions here and there and what should we do, they did motion to postpone it to the next meeting, which hopefully they'll have a full assembly and the ordinance will be right.
Right. Good. It took a while for them to get to that point, but you're right. And the staff report, they apologized and said, we didn't catch this. And so, it'll be taken up. People have a chance to talk about it or listen to it at the next meeting.
So just about when we got over that, Mike, we stumbled into the next big piece of legislation having to do with racetrack regulation.
Yes, that was the big one.
This one having to do with small racetrack regulations. This was something that has been kicked around for a while. There's a family up in Sutton that has 50 acres that has been putting on dirt bike races on their property for some time. They were told they needed to have a permit for it, and so they've kind of carved out a new permit process for small racetracks. But boy, did it get complicated.
I must admit, I said, this seemed so simple at the beginning. The issue was around how often you could practice and have races there to reduce noise. I thought that was the essence of it.
So, yeah, the way that the ordinance was written, they held them to 10 events a year, which sounds pretty reasonable. But when they practice for those events every day, that doesn't matter to the neighbors who are around there. And it was argued by some people that came, actually quite a few neighbors came out who were very respectful of the owners of the property and very appreciative of him trying to work with kids to do something good. But the noise was just too much for them. And they wanted some modification in it. And every day of the week was just too much. So there was a lot of testimony. I kind of quit counting, Mike, but there was a ton of testimony for and against, not as much against, I would say. This we should mention, and something I mean to follow up with, this piece of legislation went to the Planning Commission first, and they passed it unanimously, but there were no homeowners there to testify, which seems very odd to me, and I wanted to talk. I haven't had a chance, but I'd like to talk to somebody on the Planning Commission and find out why that is. But after many, I don't even know how long that went on, Mike. We didn't get out of there till 10, and this seems like it took up the bulk of the meeting.
Yeah, at least an hour. Yeah.
Barb, after being trying not to be delayed, a couple of the proponents for it got rather aggressive. It was pretty a raucous meeting there. But at the end of the day, Barbara Doty made a slight amendment to give a little bit of relief to the homeowners by cutting back the hours. The proposed hours were 10 to 10, 7 days a week, and now they're 10 to 8, Monday through Thursdays, and then on the weekends. They have to take one day off, which sounds like they'll take Friday off, and then they attend to 10 on the weekends. So they'll have one day of peace out there from it. So it's another, just a reminder, Mike, that there was a lot of discussion about whether it included big racetracks and whether it included the Iditarod, and which it didn't because those are special events, but how it differed. Did it apply to the bigger racetracks? I'm not even sure how they pounded that out at the very end.
What we will do is, I think this is a time to, you're going to talk to planning committee.
I'm going to try to.
Right.
I'm going to try to reach
members of the staff of the borough, maybe even have them come in and Alex Strawn in particular, and come in and say, okay, at the request of the assembly, gave a history and described what was going on. I'd like to take another stab at that by having a description of what was, what he proposed, and what happened. And now that the dust has cleared, the implications of what happened.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. I think that's fair, because I think it was left pretty, I haven't re-listened to the tape, but it was hard to follow because there were so many people making motions and amending motions and, whether it applied and whether it didn't apply. But, at the end of the day, Mike, this is about land use, and it's about having what we're going to continue to have as we fill the density out to the outer areas of neighbor conflicts of what people want to do on their property that affect other people, and what laws people are willing to have, or ordinances that give some protection to that. Oddly enough, one of the big conversations during the open persons had a chance to be heard was this a very eloquent speaking gentleman from the Willowaw subdivision over by Wasilla that talked about their ongoing efforts for crime in their area and what they're doing to be proactive to try to help. And part of that has been they're putting more focus on invoking the junk ordinance and got some more compliance help from the borough. So it just kind of sort of opens the wound to show you there's a lot more work to be done when it comes to coming up with a few rules more than we have that give people a protection of their investment that they've lived in. A lot of those homeowners say they've lived there 40 years. You never know what's going to happen next door if you don't own the property next door, but I think you're entitled to some peace and quiet. But on the other hand, you do have people like this gentleman who really wants to do something good for kids and give them something to be active and using their energy in, and he's using his own property to do it. So there's a way to, you got to figure out where those compromises
I was
are.
Impressed. I was impressed with both the testimony for and against the particular ordinance change, et cetera, that people were trying to find the sweet spot of accommodation and mediation and so on. I also think it's important to mention that having only five members there, Mr. Mayfield took a stab at running the meeting, but there was certainly throughout this particular discussion a need for really tight attention to process. Because what happens in meetings is that sometimes they slip away, and some of the there's a reason why there are rules for running the meetings. It keeps things orderly, and I know that the clerk was working heavily to ensure that proper process was followed, so that when you reviewed what had happened, it was all done in an appropriate manner and wouldn't have to be redone in some fashion.
Right. One more piece of testimony, Mike, that I wanted to mention while we have a couple minutes. Well, I thought it was a good testimony. Was one having to do with EMS, and it was a gentleman that had worked in our EMS and had quite a long background in EMS, sat through the whole meeting. This was quite long to have his two cents about this. But he brought a bit of a light on something I think we don't talk about enough, and that is, what are we going to do about our EMS situation? We have 80 to 100 EMS volunteer EMS providers that are paid volunteer, but they're paid a minimum wage. We lose responders all the time to Anchorage because they get the training. We spend a lot of money in training them up. We've built even training centers for them and everything, and they end up going because they need more than a minimum wage job. And what his point was is that, what is our 5-year plan? And we need to have a plan because this is not sustainable. And I think I agree with him, actually. And I think Barbara Doty at the very end brought it up again and said she would and tasked the administration with having Mr. Heatherly, who's now head of that department, present them, well, what is our 5-year plan? They're going to have to. Our population is getting big enough now that we're going to have to form, by law, metropolitan, I can't remember what that is, Mike, but what the borough has or the municipality has, organization by law. And we're going to have to address some things we've been kind of flying under the radar with, and this should be part of that plan. And she, of course, she's a doc, and she wants to know what our plan is for 5 years. Plan. I think that's reasonable, and I think I'm looking forward to hearing more about that.
That was a good point. Good section. Well, that's pretty much the last piece we're going to be able to cover today. Any last comment or?
Nope. We should just note there's an assembly meeting at 6 next week for a discussion on possible propositions for the election. I think it's about bonds and that sort of thing. And then there won't be another regular assembly meeting till the 19th.
Gotcha. Okay, well, have a good day. Enjoy the sun, which has just peeked out through the clouds. Citizen Lobbyist, appreciate your walking us through all of this stuff.
All right. Have a great day.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The Citizen Lobbyist, broadcast on Thursdays at 8 a.m. and repeated at 5 p.m. on Big Cabbage Radio in Palmer, Alaska. You can find the podcast at radiofreepalmer.org. The views and opinions of moderators and guests did not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.